Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Today on the podcast, how to teach surgical airways. You know, cricothoracotomy. This is the take-home messages from the one-hour session we did eight times at the SMAC Ultimate Conference. We had been doing this, myself and some brilliant instructors, for I think this was our fourth year doing it. This was the year, at least for me, that it finally clicked into a state of really, I don't want to say perfection, but this is the closest I've ever come with a didactic course. And that's a testament to doing it a bunch and then the amazing instructors I got to work with for this class. And so these are going to be the take-home lessons of kind of not quite getting it where I wanted for 3 years and then finally getting to the point where I think we have really nailed it, which is perfect because we'll never be doing it again. But what you could do now is if you want to do a cricothoracotomy session for your residents, if you want to do a session for your co-attendings at a community place, if you want to just really have the mental layout for a course for yourself so that you could continue to practice and learn so that you are ready, then this podcast will be for you. All right, so we trained 20 people at a time, and we had between 4 and 5 instructors for each of these sessions. So that is a very good instructor-to-learner ratio. Can we do it with less? We probably could. The problem is that you really don't want to let mistakes continue. You want to have enough instructors that you could look over as people are doing the procedure, and if you identify a mistake, stop them before they continue to practice bad procedural technique, because that stuff could become ingrained and then you're kind of hosed because they will continue deliberate practice on the wrong technique. And that's just the worst thing in the world. So you probably want some reasonably high instructor to session participant ratio. Now, another key difference we had this year is each participant had their own model in front of them. In previous years, we'd have 2 or 3 people per model and they'd switch off. And it really, I think, stole from the learning potential, because with what we could do this year, we could actually take them step by step and they all could follow along in real time, which we couldn't do if you share models. Now, this is only possible because of Laura Duggan's amazing 3D printed model that I've talked about many times on the site, and that each of you should have your own version of, because you want to be able to practice this at home. We have one of those for each of the participants. Now, it would have been really nice, and maybe in future iterations, if there ever are any, we could actually build into the cost of the course the ability for each person to have their own to take home with them. This time, we did not allow them to take the models. We had to use it for the next participants in these sessions in the future. But that would have been really the ideal, is you just build in that cost of bulk-produced 3D printed models and let people take them home afterwards. But each person had something to practice on in front of them. The first part of the course, after introductions and a brief, you know, discussion of who we were and what we did, the first part of the course was who gets a crike, so selection, and then mental preparation. And we talked about the various failed airway algorithms. I presented the MCRIT modification of the shock trauma failed airway algorithm. And then we went into CRICON 2, the simplified cricothoracotomy alert posture. You could go to the show notes for this episode, mcrit.org/248, and see everything we're talking about. And then once we had discussed who and how you mentally prepare, then we started looking to how to actually do the procedure. And obviously the first part of that is locating the site to cut. We showed some anatomical drawings and pictures. We emphasized start low and then feel your way high rather than vice versa. We discussed the laryngeal handshake for when you can't really feel the anterior anatomy to actually feel from the side. So Rich Levitan's chokehold method as a backup to actually identify that mobile mass of laryngeal structures. And then what we have people do is actually feel on each other, because you can't get models with more verisimilitude than actual people. So we had people feel for the cricothyroid membrane on their immediate neighbor and then switch and switch and switch and switch. And it's totally worth doing this for 5 minutes or so to allow a wide variety of external anatomy to be palpated. And this will beat any pig trachea out there. Because what do you need to do to perform this? You need to be able to find the membrane or identify that you can't, which is equally acceptable. And then you need to actually be able to feel the internal anatomy, for which Laura's models do a great job. So you don't need animal trachea. And in fact, we've moved entirely away in all forms of teaching of surgical airway in my when I have control over it from any animal or cadaver tissue. I think it's completely unnecessary. And I don't even think you necessarily need the blood to really get a good experience. What you need to do is have actual human models for external anatomy, and then we will talk about how to deal with the fact that it is a blind procedure once you make your first cut. And I don't think you need corpses or animals to do that. Okay, so everyone's feeling, they're doing the laryngeal handshake, all that great stuff. The next step is we actually build the model. Now, in contradistinction to previous iterations of this course, we used cheap methodology for doing the models for this, because we want people to be able to take this experience of being able to simulate this at home with them. Grab a 3D printed model, buy some cheap stuff, or acquire it, you know what I mean, and then you are good to go for the rest of your career and do what Sarah Gray does and set an appointment on your calendar every 30 or 60 days to practice crikes for 5 to 10 minutes using the equipment you have in your own home. So what do you need? You need a 3D printed model. You need gaffer's tape. Now, gaffer's tape looks like duct tape, but it is not, because it does not leave a residue. This is the stuff I used when I was doing audiovisual work to pay my way through college, and it's great. You could tape down wires on really expensive carpet or floors and leave no residue, not rip off paint, and so this is what they use as gaffers on movie sets. Gaffers are the people taping down all the wires on your movie sets, and so you get some gaffer's tape. Now, gaffer's tape is not all the same. There's really crappy brands and there's good brands. I have a link to what you want, but it's gaffer power. It's worth spending the extra $4 to get the good version, because your model won't get all gummed up and disgusting. And so I recommend getting the 2-inch tape. It is the perfect size to do a membrane and to do anything around your house you want temporarily taped up that won't destroy the finish on whatever you're taping. So buy a big roll of gaffer's tape. This, if you're using it only for crike practice, will last you probably 20 years. And then you need some 4x4s to simulate tissue you have to cut through. And then you need plastic bags. And I'm talking about like the plastic specimen bags you have in your hospital that you send blood tubes down. We at the actual SMAC lab were using the Ziploc bags that you'd put sandwiches in. Those work fine too, but they're not tinted. So it's not quite as nice as the pink or yellow bags that you might have in your hospital. But any plastic bag will do. And if you want to know how to build the model out of that stuff, the video is in the show notes of this episode. And it's also MCRIT Podcast 231. Now, we had like 10 of the Frova Cryco Trainer stands, which work perfectly for the models I just described. They allow you to actually put that 3D printed model in a base so it doesn't move around. And then you could either use it to put the plastic bag locked down over it, or if you have any form of artificial skin, it works for that. There's a picture of it in the show notes, but we didn't have enough for everyone. And I didn't want to make it a situation where some people have the cool stands and some people don't. That makes people feel bad. So we didn't use any of them. But if you have this, or you could buy one for your residency. You only need like one or two of these. It makes a nice addition, but they're totally not essential. All right, so we had everyone build their own model up front in the classroom. This was another key game changer. I actually requested a video camera, you know, just like a camcorder, but it could have been a Hero, GoPro, whatever. It wouldn't have mattered. I just needed something on a tripod aiming down, which allowed me to demonstrate up front at a table and do all of the crike steps and building the model while people are watching in real time on the big screens behind me. And that was key. That was huge. And in fact, this is what I do for all of my in-services for the residents or attendings when I'm demonstrating a new piece of equipment or we're doing a procedural lecture. I just get a GoPro, I put it on a tripod, I aim it down at a table, and this allows everyone to actually see what I'm doing. So we had one of those, and we could go with a switcher, an HDMI switcher, to allow me to go between slides and this real-time camera. Now, the next part of this was actually where we departed from previous iterations, and we did the next part in a technique called rapid cycle deliberate practice. Rapid cycle deliberate practice. Now, I was first exposed to this at the RESUS-TO conference done by Hicks, Petrosniak, Gray, Vic Brazel, Jesse Spurs, just this amazing group of people. It was such a good conference. And one of the lecturers there was by Aliyah Duramsi. And she blew me away in two ways. Because first of all, at that conference, I learned from her about rapid cycle deliberate practice. And then right before the SMAC Crike sessions, like a few weeks beforehand, she had put out an article with the entire Toronto crew. So, you know, Hicks, Petrosniak, Gray, they put out a modified Delphi article on the actual steps of a Bougier-aided cricothoracotomy. And I was part of their study, and what they actually created was a checklist for each step. So from, and Aliyah was the first author on this, so from her I got two things that changed the course of this, because what we actually did is in front of each station, there was a modified version of their Delphi-derived checklist for each of the steps of the procedure. So people could look down and see each of the steps. And then we actually taught the steps through rapid cycle deliberate practice. And I'm going to explain what that is. But be aware, I have an 8-minute interview with Aliyah on the podcast show notes for this episode. So if you want to hear more from her about the study, about rapid cycle deliberate practice, then just go over there and you could hear more on that. But briefly, the idea in general of rapid cycle deliberate practice is, and this is, you know, usually I think where people are using it is for simulations, but I used it as procedural teaching, and I think it works great there too, is you split the case or the procedure into small segments. So instead of teaching something on MAS, you're actually going to break it down into little pieces. And then after each piece, you micro-debrief. You give a very short discussion, questions, everyone have everyone on the same page, and then you add progressively to it. Now, the way I did that is first, I built up the procedure step by step with me demonstrating on camera and then people doing it in real time. And that way we could stop, oh, I don't understand where my fingers are supposed to go. The instructors are walking around making sure everyone gets it right. If there's anything that's being done wrong, like for instance, one of the major F-ups that I see all the time is people like to keep their fingers in the hole while the scalpel's coming in, which is natural. You don't want to lose the hole. This is like your big innate fear. But you also will absolutely cut yourself during real crike. So we have to really stress, and we could re-demonstrate again and again, that your finger and your scalpel never occupy the same space. That either your finger's pointing to the sky when your scalpel's coming in, or your scalpel's pointing to the sky when your finger's coming in. And so we could actually break that down, micro debrief that before we let people go on. So once we've taken people through all the steps, then we continue to iterate. So iteration one is they do a standing on the same side of the patient as their dominant hand with palpable anatomy. And they do the full procedure and the instructors are walking around. When we see something being done not right, we demonstrate in front of the group, we talk about it. Then iteration number two is they do the same thing, but now after the initial vertical cut, they look at the horizon. They don't look down anymore for the second cut. They just look straight ahead. So they're not really seeing where their fingers or scalpel is going. They're just seeing it only out of their peripheral vision. What this does is it simulates the blood, because the second cut is blind. So we don't want them staring right down at their scalpel. We want them to get in the mindset that they're not going to see this second cut. So they feel with their finger, they get the finger out of the way, and they have to put their scalpel in while they're not really looking with their direct vision down at it, which means you get the same feeling of not being able to see that cut. You know generally where you're going because the hole is there, but not really where you're cutting. But the anatomy stays the same. So you could palpate all of the cartilaginous structures and then get your finger out of the way and make your cut. Third iteration, you come from the non-dominant side. So you're a righty, you're coming from the patient's left side, which means, you know, because someone's doing CPR on the other side, for instance. So what you have to do now is stabilize between your non-dominant thumb and middle finger on the cricoid, not the thyroid cartilage. And then you're going to cut from caudad to cephalad rather than vice versa. And iteration four, now you have non-palpable anatomy. And so you put a bunch of 4x4s in there. You can't feel thyroid. You can't feel structures. Maybe you feel midline. So now you have to simulate making the great big vertical incision. So like 3-4 inch vertical incision. And then the last iteration is just doing this under stress. And now that stress can be doing it on another person. And so Laura's models are actually meant to be put over Kevlar, and actually the cut done on a real person. We had the instructors closely supervising each of those. You weren't allowed to go off on your own and do it. So we actually, you know, concatenated the groups down so that people were doing only three or four of these at a time. And with all of these iterations, we kept locking it in. And now if we had time during the session, people would keep practicing whichever one of those they wanted. Then we regrouped, we took questions, and then we had case discussions. We had three actual Crike videos, which I can't share, unfortunately, on the podcast, and we talked about them. We talked about all the human factors. We talked about what was done right, what was done wrong, the difference between reality and simulation, and then we finished the session, and I thought it went incredibly. Usually by session six or seven out of the eight, I wanted to kill myself. This time, I got more and more revved up with each iteration to the point where session eight just finished, and I would have done probably another four or five before I wanted to kill myself. So that was incredible. It is all a testament to the amazing learners, my incredible co-instructors, and the fact that I think we finally got the didactic theories right on how to teach Crike. So hopefully this is helpful to you. I would love to hear your experiences, your questions, your thoughts. Put them in the show notes, mcrit.org/248. This is Scott Weingart for the MCRIT podcast saying bye-bye.